Welcome to As You Wish Talk Radio. I'm your host, James Gilliland, and we are broadcasting live from beautiful Trout Lake, Washington, home of East SETI and the Self-Mastery Earth Institute, otherwise known as Paranormal and UFO Central.
You know what, you guys?
We have our whole crew on here tonight. I thought it would be a good night to just bring on some of the people that have assisted us here at the ranch at East SETI. And also to have call-ins and bring in our lead investigator at the end, Steve Marino. So we have quite a show here, and I thought it'd be nice to, you know, give some other people a little airtime that have been assisting us in this endeavor, and bring some of the eyewitnesses, you know, on the air that have seen some of the miraculous sightings here that are ongoing. They're almost every night. Every once in a while we have a slow night, but you know, usually we have some pretty powerful ships come in and light up and do their dazzle duty to say hi. And I'm sure they're going to do it at the upcoming conference as well. August 18th, 19th, and 20th, we're having an amazing Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Conference. You can go to eSETI.org and listen to that and you know, check in on the website, and you can listen to the ship, see the ship, and some of the other events that are transpiring. So, again, if you want to check out the conference, just go to eSETI.org to the Science, Spirit, and World Transformation section. Click on that, and it'll open up about this upcoming conference. And there's so much news. There are so many exciting things. We just did an interview on the Art Bell Show, and we're digging out right now underneath that. We've got our phone has rang for a week now, every minute, and so... And the emails are overwhelming. So we're trying to dig out from underneath that, and be patient with this as we dig out under the mass interest, which is really what needs to happen anyway. We're very glad that so many people are taking an interest in what's happening up here at the ranch. So in order to not waste any more time, I want to bring on some of the people that are helping us here at East SETI and some of the witnesses that have witnessed the miraculous events in the skies over the Gilliland Ranch. Anybody on the line here? Hello.
Hey, James, it's Paris.
Paris.
How you doing tonight?
Yeah, Paris has taken over the role here of the secretary, and she's a godsend, and there's no way we could have crawled out from under this deluge of calls and emails and getting things lined up for the conference. But she's had some pretty amazing sightings here as well. Do you want to discuss some of the things you've seen while you've been here, Paris?
Yeah, I've been involved for a little over a year in the sense of keeping up with James and keeping in touch with the ranch. But I've actually only been here 2 weeks now, and I tell you guys, it's been amazing. We've had flights every night and very obvious flights, and what's made it so interesting to me was that night before last, we were all exhausted here, and there were no viewers, no visitors. So everyone went to bed early. And I went out there after being on the phone for 3 days straight with new callers to just let the wind whip me around and heal me in the, you know, my bare feet on the beautiful soil and staring up at the stars. And I actually was like, wow, if I don't see anything tonight, I'll be so happy. And, you know, all that came all night for the 2 hours I was out there was three little satellites. And to me, that was just as profound as all of the nights that we've seen, literally dozens upon dozens upon dozens, 50, 60 ships, whether they're riding the Milky Way, which seems to be a thoroughfare, or literally a couple of ships that some of us were so honored to see descending slowly and coming at us quite largely into view, the size of my thumb, and then hovering there and waiting and deciding, for whatever reason, there was a plane there. We think there were some visitors there that maybe weren't ready to have contact. And it slowly backed out and then took off. And we've had quite a few wonderful lower ships come and be very close. But the activity on any night is just amazing. I mean, there's stuff going on that is undeniably unidentified entities. So it's very exciting to be here. The energy exquisite Ripley and Juliet, who are here to speak to everyone tonight, and James are, I mean, they just have my heart. They're loving, beautiful beings. And what we love the most about what's happening with the ranch and with all the people that are responding, like to your show, James, with Art Bell, is the comments that have been made by hundreds of people is, I don't know why I'm calling. It was something in your voice. It was something that gave me chills. It was the fact that Art is changing so much. It was the fact that James is so calm and just sounds like the guy next door. And what are we really looking for here? What are you offering at the conference in 3 weeks? And I would say, well, you get to see plenty of ships, but what we're here to tell you is that you're God. And that's what they want us to know, that we're more than what we appear to be, and we're even more than just humans making contact with unidentified entities.
Exactly. Now, for those who don't know, if you hold your thumb out and look at your thumb, your thumb would be the exact size as the moon itself. So your thumb would actually cover the moon at arm's length distance away. So these are pretty massive ships that are coming in and powering up. There's so much more to this. Do we have another one wanting to
come? Yeah, James, here comes Ripley.
Okay, thank you so much, Per.
Hey, James.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
So you want to share your experiences or some of the sightings you've had here at the ranch?
Yes. About 3 weeks ago, I was hanging out with two people that came to the ranch to hopefully see some ships, and it was about 3 in the afternoon, and we stepped outside, and as soon as I stepped outside, I looked up, and there was this silver object, disc-like object, just hovering there, pretty high up there, and it stayed stationary for about 5 minutes, and it would periodically shoot red and golden light, and we all saw it, all three of us, and then it took off. It just, I didn't see it fly away or anything. It just was no longer there.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were present when we had the other investigators up here with the lasers as well, when the ships actually responded to the lasers and powered up.
Uh-huh.
And I think you've seen some other pretty massive ships come in the sky watches in the evening as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been here about 3 or 4 months, and I would guesstimate I've seen over 1,000 UFOs, and my favorite ones are the big power-ups. I think we were both out there together that night when we saw that huge ship power-up in the west and fly under the clouds and go across the mountain into the east, and there's something about seeing these UFOs that is an experience that I never thought that I would have had, and that is that when I see these ships or UFOs, I feel love in my heart, and I feel a sense of just wonderment and being really present and really alive, and it's something that happens in a way that seems to be synchronistic with seeing these ships, whether it's simultaneously feeling it and seeing a ship, or when it's flying along and suddenly powers up and I get a real feeling of joy. And it seems to be that just about everybody that comes up here has that same experience. And I never would have thought that that would have been part of the experience, but that seems to be pretty integral as far as the whole thing that's going on.
So you'd say there's a definite energy exchange or exchange of consciousness and energy between the ships and the people here?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's one of the main things that happens when the sightings occur.
Yeah, I notice a lot of people that are sensitive actually feel the ships before they come in, and Ripley here is probably one of our best spotters because he's very intuitive, very sensitive, and he seems to see them before anybody else, and So we actually give Ripley here the laser to point him out to everybody else.
I don't know if I look and a ship appears, or if a ship appears and I look, or which one comes first, but there definitely seems to, a lot of times, there seems to be some sort of connection.
It's okay. You can admit it. You know, you're connected. You don't have to hide anymore. So, well, anyway, thanks a lot, Rip. Is there anybody else here that wants to come on?
There's.
Thank you so much, Rip, for coming on here.
Okay, thanks.
Hello.
Hello. So this is Juliet.
Yes, it is.
Again, do you want to share some of your experiences, some of the things you've experienced here while at the ranch?
Oh, sure. Let's see. A few nights ago, we saw a giant, it was a giant ball of golden light, and it shot across the sky with a huge tail behind it, and it was really quite close to us. I mean, it wasn't up, you know, close to the stars or anything, and it was probably one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And I had a really good feeling that it must have been a UFO.
Yeah. Now, this ball, a lot of people, when they hear that, would say, well, that's just a meteor or something.
No,
like that.
It definitely was not a meteor because, you know, I've seen plenty of meteors, and this was quite close to the ground. Well, it was probably above, you know, where airplanes fly, but it was so big, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to explain, but... I definitely know in something.
Now, did this take an upward trajectory when you were watching it?
Yes, it did, yes.
Yeah, that kind of eliminate meteors.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, we've had some awesome sightings like that where they've come in and flew right over our heads and then made a total U-turn and went back the other way or flew around the mountain. We've had quite a lot of witnesses watching these things make definite course correction.
Right.
I imagine you've seen quite a lot of other... you know, ships in the sky as well.
Oh, definitely. We see ships up there all the time. Just lots of lights that go by quite, you know, low, and sometimes they come in quite fast, and then they take a 90-degree turn, or there's just so many lights up there that definitely aren't satellites or meteors or stars or anything.
Yeah, meteors don't turn, and they don't fly underneath the clouds, and they don't, you know, totally light up and power up, and then make a right angle turn and move off in another direction.
That's right. Yeah.
Which seems to be the common thing we're seeing here on a regular basis.
Yes.
So just for the record, nobody's holding the gun to your head, and nobody's paying any big bucks come
I'm
forward.
I'm the
kind
of person where I have to, when I don't believe something until I actually see it with my own eyes. So, you know, I definitely know that there's UFOs out there now, just from what I've been seeing at the ranch here. No doubt about it.
Yeah, we've heard all these stories here, Rob. It's a conspiracy, you know. It's like,
oh no,
he's paid all these people. He's threatening them. I've heard so many stories. It's just hilarious.
No.
You know, and I tell them, I go, well, you know, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. So,
the lights are here for all to see. So
exactly. That's what Einstein said.
Whoever
wants
to come and see them with their own eyes, they're welcome to come up because they're definitely
exactly.
here.
It definitely needs to be a personal experience for this, and then you own it. It's not you know, just listening to somebody else.
Right, yes.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the air.
Oh,
I think
welcome.
We've got another guest here.
Okay.
Let's see who's next.
Just a moment, and I will find someone.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Bruce. I've been here several times. Oh, it must have been 5 or 6 times by now. Since before the turn of the century, and I've seen many ships.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were quite close. I've seen them close as about 3 city blocks away.
Great.
And I was a little skeptical, not much, because I've had some experience. But once you see them that close, and doing bizarre maneuvers and things that our aircraft can't do, including metamorphosing, such as splitting in two. It's just impossible to conclude that they're our experimental craft.
Oh, yeah, we have these things. They're massive, you know, 13 miles away, landing on the mountain and morphing from one to three and sometimes four ships and then back to one again. And just the candle power to do that 13 miles away is beyond imagination. You'd have to fly in a whole bank of giant generators, you know, to do something like that. Do you feel an exchange when you're out there sky watching, when the ships come in? Do you feel kind of an energy exchange?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's palpable. And there are sometimes I experience some communication of ideas, and I've been told things about my own life that have astounded me. And these beings, they have a sense of humor.
They do.
They have a powerful sense of humor.
Yeah, they seem to be intently spiritual and here on our behalf and trying to assist us in awakening and healing and really remembering our own divine nature.
Very much so.
It's not like the movies, you know. They didn't come to eat us and they didn't come to, you know, dissect us or take over the planet. You know, it seems to be the Hollywood version.
There seem to be several races of these beings that are visiting us, and they have different attitudes toward us. Some are more condescending. Some are more doubtful, pessimistic, and hard in their attitude toward us. But they all seem to be here for the evolution of our consciousness and for helping us to straighten out.
Yeah, I'd definitely say that's pretty much a common consensus.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Bruce, for coming on the air. Can you pass the torch there to
Betty,
another witness?
Would you like to say a word? Yeah. Betty is very shy. That's okay, honey.
It's like we have a real party of people ready to come on. You can hear in the background, it's like a little little UFO party going in the downstairs.
Said, James?
Hello.
Hello, this is Ilonka. How
Ilonka.
Are you? Yes.
You've had some pretty amazing sightings while here at the ranch.
Oh, yes. This has been really such an exciting time for me here. Really, actually, I want to go back a little bit to what the previous gentleman said about the contact and the feeling he gets.
Yes.
One time when I lived in Ventura, I was watching an airplane that was putting down these chemtrails. And as I took the binoculars to look at the airplane, instead of an airplane, I saw a ship over it. And there was this communication between the ship and I. I felt such a love from them and such a concern. And it was as if they knew me. It was just the most fantastic experience I ever had. And then that weekend, I went to a MUFON meeting, Santa Barbara Ventura MUFON, and there was a gentleman who was a producer in L.A. in the movie industry, and he had seen the same thing, and he took a picture of it, but he had much better equipment than my binoculars. And not only did I see the round disc over the chemtrail, I saw, like, thousands of pucks coming out in and out of the chemtrails as if they were directing the cleaning up of the negativity of the chemtrails.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understood they really are here to help us.
Oh, definitely. We've seen that here where they look like giant tornadoes, where all these chemtrails just all of a sudden transformed into these giant, like, tornado clouds and then turned into almost like a circular cloud and then just disappeared.
They do. They do. And so when I came here, and that was actually my first major experience with maybe what I call ETs, then I started seeing those lights traveling across the sky, wobbling a little bit from right to left as they were on their regular path going wherever they're going. And I had hoped, of course, for some sort of a contact. So when we went in after viewing them for about 45 minutes in the cold, I was actually a little bit disappointed because nothing had landed in front of us. And just as I was ready to enter the door, I saw two ships coming together, one quite close to the other. And as I looked up, and all of a sudden one ship just beamed this huge light on. And it was, again, this amazing experience. My God, they can't even see me. And they know I'm here. Mm-hmm. And it was just so wonderful that as if they didn't want me to be disappointed because they hadn't been able to land for one reason or another. There was this it was just a fantastic exchange of energy. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I was here. So today, this weekend, is the second time. And we saw, again, many, many ships last night.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very wonderful. Some of them were quite bright. So I'm just very happy to be here on this property where there is such a wonderful feeling of love, compassion, expanded awareness, hope for the future, that we are not alone on this planet, that we are watched, that we do have assistance. And James, I'm so grateful you make this available for people from all around the world who can come here and just be who they are, come as they are, and they received with such love and so much compassion from you. It's just a beautiful place to come here and be in nature. And I'm very, very grateful for you for having created this space for everyone.
Oh, thank you for bringing that wonderful energy that you bring too, as well, to the show and to the ranch.
Well, you're more than welcome.
I wanted to go into a little more detail. Could you describe the one that dropped down and really lit up? Could you see any definition of this ship or any other?
The light was so bright I couldn't see through it.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that personal connection that we want you to know you are there. We want you to stay happy and joyous because we know you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And with, again, this compassion, I hadn't asked for anything, but they simply did it. And then after that experience, we went back to Mount Shasta. One night, I sat with my relatives on the balcony, and then I asked for the Brothers of Space to come by and to show my family that they really are there. And so we were watching planes coming by on the regular flight path on the left side of the house. And all of a sudden, my sister-in-law said, "Ilonka, what is that? What is that?" And this big light came by fairly low. And there were no lights on it, no red, no green. And just this white, bright light and no sound, absolutely no sound. And it crossed the regular flight path of the airplanes. So I know that my request for one of them to the Brothers of Space was answered,
mm-hmm.
even though I didn't see them, and even though I didn't really know who I was calling to. Yet they answered the call. So I thought this is really just a great way of communication. I don't speak the words. I just think the thoughts, and there they come.
Exactly. They're extremely telepathic. And I've noticed that people that when they come here and connect in with the energy,
mm-hmm.
and they have a contact or an experience like that, it seems to follow them wherever they go. They seem to be looking up just at the right time, and then there's the ship again.
They're there. I think once you make the contact, you are part of the family.
Exactly.
So I felt, again, very, very, very happy with that. And It was wonderful, and even my sister-in-law, who does not believe in flying saucers, who poo-poos it, she was quite startled, and it starts her thinking. So I was really happy she had that experience, and that she realized no strobe lights, no sound. They've never seen an airplane coming from there. This is unusual. Food for thought.
Yeah, we've cracked the door open, you know.
Yes, yes.
And so
sure
from that
did.
Point on, it's
yeah.
been a
Well, and so to a large extent, we have to thank you for it because you have encouraged us to look for that. And the answers are coming, and the saucers are coming, and the contact is here.
And what would you say to all of these listeners about, you know, what would you, what advice would you give them concerning, you know, the nature of these contacts? Or?
Lift up your eyes, look at the skies, and just love them into your world. They will come.
Oh, thank you so much. That's just perfect.
Okay, James. Mm-hmm. And I think there's one more person here by the name Kenneth.
Okay.
Okay, here
great.
He is. Bye-bye.
Hello, James. This is Ken. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. Well, I'm enjoying your place over here. And last night we did go out, and I saw at least about 7 UFOs shooting by, and it's a very steady light. But again, no lights, no strobe lights, like an airplane. Then they go at a quiet pace, and then some of them even stop for a while, and then they start off again. And then others will, when we try to ask sometimes, they will brighten their lights, they flash their lights. So, you know, it's not a regular plane. It's a very different airplane called a UFO. And also, I do have other experiences. When I was in Machu Picchu, oh, about 15 years ago, they were flying over there. In fact, I was taking pictures of a mountain. When I came home, I got a big flying saucer in one of the pictures, right in the middle of the picture.
Awesome.
And I opened, I expanded, and I could even see windows on the top of the saucer. That's how close it was to me.
Well, I can't wait to see that picture.
Oh, that, that was quite an experience. And also, they even knocked the lights out when we were, a couple of nights, the lights went out, but then they came back on again, which they noticed because of all their electromagnetism, affects electricity of the whole area. So I've been a UFO fan, actually, for probably over 50 years.
Right.
I've got all kinds of books on it, way back when, and shows pictures of the saucers and along the motherships, which are huge. Sometimes it could be several miles long. And then you have these smaller ships, the beam ships, they call them, are somewhere between 50 and 100 feet in diameter. Mm-hmm. And those, most of the time, those are the ones we see. But occasionally, these huge motherships will come by. And they're like a city within a ship, because they can be miles long. So I've had many experiences with flying saucers most of my life.
I'd say the interest is generating the experience, wouldn't you?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And you definitely have all kinds of things happening at your ranch here. I've seen many movies that you have made, and many people that amateurs have taken the pictures. There wasn't any professional that could make up any kind of a distinguishing our facts, but the real stuff, and you have them in your... and your films, and I've seen, like I say, many pictures of the UFOs flashing and so on, and a group of people taking pictures, so it's not just one person. So you really have many things going here.
Oh, thank you so much.
So what's your next move to expand your place over here?
Oh, we're going to do something really grand here. It's in the works right now. We're going to build a Galactic Exchange Center and bring in the technologies and the healing technologies and everything that are going to turn this planet around.
What about this big show that you're planning around the
Oh, yeah, we've plugged that pretty good already. It's the Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Conference, August 18th, 19th, and 20th. And people can go to the eseti.org website and get all the information just by clicking on the Science, Spirit, and World Transformation, you know, in big letters right at the top of the page.
Mm-hmm. And what do you expect people to find here when you have this lecture going?
Well, some of the best speakers are going to be here. We've got international speakers, just pretty top-line physicists, people involved in some of the highest healing technologies. There's a lot of divine feminine speakers talking about the divine feminine. just a real strong array of top speakers in every field.
In other words, if somebody would come for this three-day lecture, they would really open their minds to many, many new things.
Oh, their minds would open, their hearts would open, and the skies are going to open too. So they're going to be seeing some things in the skies they've never seen before.
Oh, that sounds great, and I'm coming too with my wife, Ilanka.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we've been in this for myself over 50 years, and I definitely know they're here. I actually know people that have actually been picked up by some of these UFOs, and mm-hmm. they told me their experiences. And so it is for sure real.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you so much. We're going to see if we can bring our lead investigator on now, and I can't thank you enough, Ken, for coming on the show. And let's see if we can hook up with Steve Marino, our lead UFO investigator.
Sounds very good. All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, take care.
Right, bye-bye.
Okay, we're waiting for Steve Marino to come on the line. And
Hello?
Hello. We might have a little space here for a second. We're trying to call Steve Marino with PSI Applications to bring him on the line. Hello. We might be able to get Steve on the call-in number. Our toll-free call-in number is 877-876-5227. So hopefully Steve could actually call in on that line, seeing we're not seeming to be able to pick him up on our regular line. Or if anybody else wants to discuss some of their experiences, their UFO experiences, they could also call that number as well.
Hello, James. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on.
Good. Good.
Awesome.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Now, James, this is Don. I was just wondering, do you guys want to take calls on this? Do you guys want to take calls and we could set you up so that you guys can take calls, or do you just want to keep going?
Let's just bring Steve on and we'll just keep going.
You got it. He's on the air already.
All right.
Thank you.
Hello, Steve.
How you doing, James?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we're having a little trouble with the hookup, but we're there now, so all is well.
Yeah, I was listening to your witnesses there. Sounds like you have a really great crowd there. Got a lot of spirit, and they got good hearts. And that's pretty important from what my experience is with investigating ufology and its connection to contactees. The connection is in their heart. That's where the contact is at.
But, we had an experience here. I was hoping Paris and one of the others would talk about it, but we had an amazing ship come in really low. She did mention it, and we had some people here that were, you know, had certain alphabet agency connections, you might say.
Right.
And it looked like it was coming in for a landing. It had seven lights on it, 7 points.
Right.
Which is interesting because, you know, the Pleiades are the seven sisters and the seven stars, and there's so many different connections to seven around that.
Right.
And boy, it was just meandering right on in. Unfortunately, I was on the Art Bell show when it happened, and I could hear everybody screaming
right
out there and hooting and hollering, you know. So,
and there, unfortunately, there's no images of that or video, right?
No, I gave them the cameras and I set it all up to happen, but you know, people don't realize that when these things happen, 99.9% of the people will forget they have a camera in their
mm-hmm.
hand.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is, you know.
Well, we're going to try and fix that, hopefully, with this remote cam setup. It'll automatically take shots and video, you know, when there's motion caught in the field.
Exactly. I think that's going to be awesome once we get that fired up and going. I think we need a few more parts to this remote cam, and it's just going to be awesome. If anybody wants to get involved and send us a really nice little computer.
Yeah. You know, actually, Wayne was thinking if he could borrow an hour of Paris's time tomorrow, he could probably guide her through getting that thing hooked up to where it's possible that you could use that during a conference for live skywatches.
Yeah, we're bringing a computer over there. It's an old computer, and unfortunately, it's just been beat up so bad by, you know, being in this business, in the UFO business. You got every hacker and people trying to make you go away. You know,
right.
And so this one's limping along. So,
you know, one thing I wanted to maybe kind of offer you here, James, a little bit of time we have is a little bit of grounding and something for those of the nuts and bolts scientific mind. Being your investigator, lead investigator and such. I wanted to offer a couple suggestions to people who are out there skywatching that I think, you know, like you and I were talking about, trying to set up a logging system and a very simplified system of notating time, azimuth, and elevation and that sort of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things is you were indicating about the full moon being a reckoning point for size, and I wanted to clarify something for you. So that people, when they go to reflect back on the size of an object, could do a comparison to this. In all actuality, what the basis is if you hold an aspirin at arm's length, that right there will represent what the size of the full moon would be, the size of an aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
And an aspirin just happens to be the right size, which is basically 9 millimeters. And so there's actually a formula that you can use that's pretty simple to determine the size of a possible craft. Of course, we're hoping that, you know, in a certain instance, in any instance, anybody would want to determine if something they're observing is either in space, in the, higher threshold of space, like a satellite in the thermosphere, which is about 428 miles out, or if it's in our atmosphere, like a plane would be. That could be, you know, anywhere as high as, 8 miles, you know. Because, you know, for objects that are within our atmosphere, it would be pretty easy to determine the size if you could get a basis of where that object might be, what landmark it might be over, you know, as far as line of sight goes.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically the formula uses the distance to the moon, it uses a constant for that formula. It's and it works out well. It's 0.009, 235. But once you got the distance to the object, line of sight, which is basically the hypotenuse of a triangle, you know, if you see the object is like over a tree that you know is X distance away on the ground, then you can gauge the line of sight, you know, the hypotenuse of that triangle right up to the object. Once you have that, basically, the formula just involves taking that constant and then multiplying it by the comparison to the aspirin, you know, and by the distance line of sight, and you have the length of that object. If you tried this experiment with, let's say, an airplane or something like that, you would get an accuracy probably within about a 15% margin of error.
Mm-hmm.
I did it with a couple of sightings. One we had, in fact, the March 9th UFO 3999, I believe, was one that, right before we went on the air with you, previewing Beckoning Contact article, which was the one that kind of solidified your case up there. Was on the RPL, so I think Ian was co-hosting that night. And we had a major UFO event that occurred right over our home location here, Psi Applications, like 20 minutes before we went on the show there to do that. It was a pretty major thing. I think we were working on it for like a month for you or something. We nailed down all the prior UFO history, the flap of activity that Janelle and Hynek had asked to be investigated, and the scientific reports and all that. So it was a pretty major event. The timing on it, though, seemed to be really linked, you know, to this. And we applied those formulas because the object was obviously... it was very low. It was like about maybe the height of maybe, you know, 10,000 feet or something. It was basically right within our atmosphere, and it stopped right over the top of the house and was doing these gyrations and stuff. And actually, it wasn't over the top. It was off a little bit of a distance, but we were able to gauge line of sight and everything, and we worked out the formulas on it, and we got an approximation of like 50 feet for the size of this craft.
Mm-hmm.
And so... You know, I'm thinking, you know, when I come up there, it would be really good to probably try and work out some real simplified protocols that people could utilize as far as when they see something by, gauging
where the proximity of it is azimuth-wise, you know, north or southwest or whatever, elevation being zero at ground level, 90 straight up. And the time and the brightness of the object as compared to something that would be pre-established, you know, like the moon or Venus. With those three things, or four things, we could probably have a real viable database to, and substantiate, you know, the majority of these things, of what percentage of them are actually out in space, and what percentage of them are in the our atmosphere, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, because by all rights, I guess, for those of the scientific mind, there should be a percentage of these, at least probably 40 or 50%, that could be attributed to astronomical objects, like meteors or whatever, or satellites or that sort of thing, you know. Some percentage of them, at least.
Yeah, we use Heavens Above website, and
yeah.
We make sure where the, you know, shuttle is and where the space station is. And
yeah, that's really good thing, too.
And all the iridium flares and everything, and use that to toss out anything that would fit into that time frame.
Exactly.
We found that it's very accurate. They'll say when the space station is coming in, what direction, and exactly the time when it's overhead. And,
right.
And it's very, very accurate up to...
It's pretty incredible.
You know, less than a minute.
Yeah, you know, there's got to be a degree of a margin of error, because to try and, you know, calculate, you know, where something's going to show up at a certain time like that, it's got to have some sort of margin of error. But I find it to be within 10 to 15%, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But with this kind of methodology here, it'd be easy to backtrack on any series of sightings, because anybody would be able to simply just hold this thing up in the, above them and shout time, azimuth, elevation, and brightness of the object and any other descriptions into a tape recorder, and then anybody could go back over the previous night to see and then cross-correlate to those databases, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The admiration and the respect from the scientific community and nuts and bolts people would just be unbelievable for something like that, because I think you're going to find probably a very large majority of these, maybe not a majority, but at least probably 50% could be attributed to UFOs, because I've seen the activity up there, and I know what most folks are talking about there, you know.
Yeah, we either need some major funding or some very dedicated people that want to sit out and fill out those logs and
do
all the measurement. That's our main problem.
Yeah, you know what? What I was thinking, what would work would be just like a tape recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And then there would be like four simplified things. We would make it real simplified where people would just have to like recite like four items, you know, which would basically be, you know, if you had a marker out there that stipulated where north was,
mm-hmm.
And then they could just say, like, you know, northeast, northwest, and then, you know, 0 to 90 degrees elevation, and a certain index of brightness, which, as you know, -3 is about, I think, for Venus, -3 magnitude, and anything else that, you know, is pertinent, and the tape recorder catches it, then, you know, nobody has to really fill out a thing. It would make it easy, you know.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about trying to bring some of this up for you with me and try and set it up for you, you know, because it would be something that would be real simple to do, and from an investigative point of view, it would be a real good way to nail down what exactly are UFOs, you know, because there'd be no disputing it then.
We've got some people that have the equipment. It's that we'd have to buy it down the road, but I mean, it's some pretty sophisticated equipment that can actually go through the light spectrum and tell exactly what kind of light is coming off these ships, the gauge, the size, and do just about anything, and you know, pick up any kind of magnetic, you know, shifts in energy and the whole nine yards, and
exactly
build a little observation place here, and then hook the webcam into that as well, so
people
can observe it.
Yeah, because I think, you know, like gratings for cameras are used to do spectrometer analysis on light factors. And with that, you're able to really gauge what the composition is of the object or Morpheus structure, you know. And it could be a great aid, too.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the things that are going through your investigator's mind to try and solidify the scientific end of your case file up there, which I'm sure is going to be something you're going to want to do, especially after this conference with all these most important people that are going to be meeting up there. So it's going to be a pretty productive venue.
I've noticed these top physicists. I mean, some of these people have 9 degrees. It's amazing. One guy had 4 degrees, 4 PhDs and everything. You know, and these guys, as brand as they are, when the ships come in, you always look at them, and the camera's, you know, hanging from their neck.
Right.
You know, until it's gone.
Right. Yeah, what I find most intriguing also is not only the degrees in other areas as far as political science and diplomacy,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing. I mean, these folks in exopolitics are already working on how the integration of benevolent alien culture into our society would work politically,
mm-hmm.
trying to develop ways that it can happen in a peaceful manner, you know, and in a manner that would not be disruptive to society, you know.
Yeah, Dr. Michael Sala and Dr. Alfred Wabre, I'm still getting constant emails, and we're staying in very close touch, and we're all working together, which is wonderful. For a while there, it seems like the UFO community was very split and competitive, and there's a lot of problems, and now we're all coming together, realizing that each has a very important part to play, and bringing this information to the United Nations, you know, and to every government, every leader, every governor, you know, every mayor. This information is going to be going out everywhere here real shortly.
Right, right. You know, something else I wanted to mention to you is you were asking me about how far out space really was, and I got a little information for you here.
What was that? How many miles was that again?
Well, you got within our actual atmosphere, referred to as the troposphere, basically, is about 11 miles out.
Mm-hmm.
And then from 11 miles out to approximately 31 miles is the stratosphere. And then from 31 miles to about 50 miles out is the mesosphere. And then from 50 miles out to 428 miles out is where you'd actually have the space where, you know, you'd have satellites and a shuttle and all that, you know,
mm-hmm.
Orbiting around. Probably part of that would go into the mesosphere as well. So, you know, anywhere from approximately, I'd say maybe 40 miles to 428 miles would be the orbitable space, you know, of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who's of a nuts and bolt mind out there who may want to ad lib to that or correct it, please, you know, chime in. But that's pretty much what I've come up with on it. So when anybody sees anything that's in the air there, they might want to get a gauge on in their mind of what they're feeling, if it's like within 11 miles or, you know, way out there orbiting. Comets are often seen within the mesosphere space, anywhere from 30 miles to 50 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it makes a difference, too. I think there's another analysis that can be set up in determining if something is orbital and is out there 50 to 420 miles out. You're only going to see a satellite or any man-made object move at a certain rate of speed being that far out. So once we can gauge that, I'm going to try and set that up. It'll be real easy to tell if something immediately falls in the UFO category because it exceeds that speed. You know, obviously,
exactly.
There's certain things like, you know, if it stops, if it turns 90-degree angle, that sort of, there's certain qualifications automatically, you know, put something into a UFO category, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then if something doesn't fall into a UFO category, it stays consistent whatever. It still doesn't mean it is not a UFO. It just means that it could be possibly something else also. But, you know, this type of criteria chart would be real beneficial to determine what all the things that fall definitively into the UFO category, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that the Earth shadow, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, when the sun is pretty far down in the west, that, you know, just about everything to the east that you're looking is self-illuminated. It's not reflecting light, which takes it out of the satellite category. And
right,
if
right.
we had a little chart to show exactly where the sun is, you know, when the sun's directly behind the Earth, everything overhead is going to be self-illuminated.
Right, exactly. And also, you'll never see a satellite with blinking lights. They don't have any blinking lights.
Yeah.
There may be some exceptions to that for the most part.
Well, we have these ones power up, and it's just enormous. So
right.
The light they put off is, you know, the energy is just enormous, and it looks like a brilliant blue corona when they do it.
Right. Most of the ones that you're talking about that power up and such, it sounds like they're mostly within the troposphere, you know, like within 11 miles up,
mm-hmm.
not orbital, right?
Well, with the lasers that we were using, we had two two different lasers, and I have one that only goes 2,000 feet.
Uh-huh.
And these things were just above that, it seemed like. And we had one that went, I believe this other one went something like 30 miles was the maximum that it could go. And it seemed to be sticking right on the point of some of these massive ships that came in and powered up.
Right.
So, you know, they're definitely within, you know, the laser was going just above them or even with them. So they're definitely 30 miles on down. And we have just a phenomenal amount of these ships that are actually flying below the trees and through the trees and you know, underneath the clouds, which definitely put them within, you know, our atmosphere.
Exactly. Would there be a certain percentage that you might, of these, that you might delegate to non-material objects, basically Morpheus-type gas structures, or, you know, basically like plasma-type ships that really didn't have a solidity content to them, you know?
You know, definitely. Now, even the metallic ships that are seem to be metallic, when they power up, they become like a non-physical element when they really kick on the juice. But, you know, there are some ships, I think, that are coming in from other dimensions and stepping down. We have a series of photos actually taken by Spargiedemann that shows a ship, and it looks like a blue plasma ball, you might say, and as it's stepping down in frequency, it becomes more and more physical.
Right.
And then it looks like almost like a living matter or like a living metal or something like that. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah, there was one that I had done some rendering on. It was the one that was speeding past Vega from way back, I think it was 1999 or 2000, and then it disappeared for a second, and when it reappeared, I did some still frames, and that's the one that has all the intertwined, looks like beings almost, looking back toward the camera.
Uh-huh.
But it reminded me that, you know, it is probable that some of these may even be what are referred to as elementals, or like in some of the UFO literature, Pleiadians and stuff are referred to these higher beings that they look towards, referred to as sixes, which is supposed to be a communal group of six ethereal beings who stay together in a spherical collective, and are very, you know, very high state of mind and spiritual and such. And actually, that's been referred to in some of the research that was being conducted in the existence beyond death communications using externalized devices. They received information on these sixes as well, you know, unrelated to ufology. And I was thinking, looking at some of these, that, you know, that there could be an ethereal type being that exists in some of these too that behaves as UFOs, you know.
Exactly. They have physical bodies, energy bodies, light bodies, and some are just pure consciousness that have created like a Merkaba or more of a spiritual ship. And, you know, these are all covered in the ancient Vedic texts, and, you know, they tell about the different types of ships and the beings on them. And
absolutely.
You know, it's been going on for a long, long time.
Yeah, because when you actually went on board, which brought me into the case originally back in time, it was pretty incredible because there was actual physical evidence of the presence of this ship and the experience that occurred, but yet it still seemed your physical body didn't go up, but obviously your ethereal body did, because as evidenced by the heart-shaped burn mark on your chest.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the alteration to the aspen leaves at the top of the tree, which were like 20 times larger than normal leaves. So you actually had the experience of being able to go on board one of these light craft, ethereal craft, that didn't seem physical, but had a very ethereal component to it that was very real. And you actually talked to a being and everything. So it's pretty interesting, you know.
It seems like everything is physical to that level. You know, these beings are just, they're at a different frequency, and the rules are a little different there. They're much more unlimited, but, you know, they have their reality, and it's physical to them, but it would be totally non-physical to us.
Right, right. Yeah, I would say that those would probably be considered beings of the highest nature, you know, definitely benevolent nature.
And these contacts, according to your investigations lately, are happening, I mean, everywhere, Mexico, Peru, a lot of similarities.
Yeah, definitely. of course, we know about Project Contact's venues and potential plans down in Peru, and I think that, you know, it would be, there's a great possibility that, you know, the same thing could happen up at your ranch, but probably the only reason it wouldn't would be because of the military-industrial complex and their response to something like that, whereas down in Peru, they don't really have that kind of capability to respond like we do up here, so they're a little bit safer to show themselves in a more physical component, you know. But who knows, maybe that might change. You know, I'm sure they have some capabilities of setting up a field of stealth or something, you know. All I know is I keep on looking at that field of Yakanesha you have there as like an inviting location for that to occur.
yeah. There's a, from my intuitive information or telepathic information, I've been hearing that there are some very strong negotiations happening right now, and with the benevolent ETs, and they're making it very clear they've got to really step in right now to assist us in this awakening healing process and help us, you know, turn the environment around and you know, diminish some of the severity of some of these changes that are coming about, these earth changes.
Right. I sure hope so, because there's definitely some changes that are occurring of the more negative nature to our planet's environment and the species on the planet right now, and so I hope that will be the case. You know, I believe they do have the technology to assist us, but they're not just going to take over and make it right. We've got to kind of reach out to them and show them that we're capable of it and want to make a difference ourselves, you know.
Exactly. We have to rise to the occasion and show that we are worth, you know,
right,
saving and taking, you know, and, you know, this environment is just, the diversity of life here is like no other planet, and it's worth saving, and they know that, and they're doing all they can to help us, you know, move to the next level.
Right. Well, I'm sure we're going to need somebody on this end, and you're the man, so you've got the place up there, and we're going to try and make it happen.
Oh, I'm one of many, you know.
Yeah.
I want to pass the torch. I'll just throw it in your camp next.
It's like a hot potato, man. We keep on tossing it back and forth.
Exactly. Well, it looks like we're out of time, and thank you so much again, Steve, for coming on the show.
My pleasure, James.
And this is James Gillen signing off with As You Wish Talk Radio. And again, have a wonderful day, and start looking up and open your minds and hearts and see what happens. Be well.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.